Rumbling and clanking, the battered APC rolled along the irregular landscape of the Texas desert, its cracked headlights throwing wild columns of splayed light ahead of the war wag as it rose and fell. Crouched in the driver's chair, Baron Edgar Gaza stared hatefully through the small rectangular slit of a knob port, his hands clenched hard on the steering yoke of the pre-dark vehicle. Once there had been periscopes for the driver and gunner to see through without exposing themselves to enemy fire, but those had been broken long ago, and now the only way to see was through small rectangular vents. In the rear of the war wag, four of his wives were sitting near their gun ports, their pale hands expertly cradling 9mm Uzi machine pistols. Spare clips were thrust like knives into their belts, and each bore fresh wounds from their recent battles, bloody bandages covering their legs and arms. Sitting in the middle of the deck, his first wife was clumsily working on a 50-caliber machine gun, trying to figure out how to unlink the ammo belt to make the big bore blaster feed properly. The turret and gunner's nest rose directly behind the woman, but those periscopes had also been smashed. The 25mm cannon had survived intact, but had been removed for use in the Ville keep, and now they only had a 50-caliber machine gun to mount on the Pintle stanchion. It didn't have anywhere near the sheer destructive power of the explosive 25mm shells. On the other hand, it didn't eat ammo as fast, and the brass cartridges could be reloaded. Gaza glanced at her, more pleased with the amount accomplished than the wealth of skin exposed from her position. Bending over the way she was, her full breasts were nearly coming out of her blouse. Returning to the driving, Gaza felt vastly pleased with himself for choosing Allison. Sex was great, but a wife who could fire a blaster was worth 100 times more than some dumb slut as beautiful as the moon, but whose only talent was spreading her legs. Suddenly, Allison snapped her fingers for his attention.
What is it?
The mute woman gestured to the east and flipped over a hand until it was palm up. Gaza frowned angrily. Dawn was near, eh? Nuking hell. They hadn't traveled anywhere near the number of miles he had wanted. But the APC had broken down several times, and once during repairs they had been attacked by a swarm of millipedes. Damn muty insects were harder than hell to chill, and only their rapid fires had held them off long enough for Gaza to fix the diesel engine and get the APC rolling again. Little bastards still tried to get in through the air vents and had to be shot off with precious ammo. Damn the Corps and their pet muties.
Okay, I'll find us some shade to rest in during the day.
Gaza squinted through the ob port.
In the lee of a sand dune or something.
From experience, he knew that driving the metal vehicle in the desert sun made it hot enough to ace a norm. They would have to drive only after sundown and sleep during the day. That would put them at a disadvantage, since the headlights would give away their position for miles, but there was nothing he could do about that. On the other hand, it would make tracking the Outlanders a lot easier. His original idea had been to drive north into New Mex and take over some Ville as their new baron. But Allison had vetoed that plan and insisted they go to the south, directly on the trail of Ryan and the others. Actually, this pleased Gaza greatly. As much as he wanted to be a baron again, revenge on the Outlanders would be even better. Besides, the man knew it was always wise to follow the advice of the Doomy. Soon enough, he would find the Outlanders. Gaza only hoped that Allison had the machine gun operational by then. He didn't want Ryan and the others merely dead. He wanted them torn into pieces too small for even the scorpions to eat. Mutilation, rape, and bloody torture would have been better, but there was no time for that. Even as he hunted for the people on horseback, the Sekhmen from his former Ville might be hunting after him as well. And they would want to do to Gaza exactly what he wanted to do to Ryan. As if sensing these thoughts, Allison turned away from the gun porch he had been watching and nodded at her husband. Gaza felt his skin crawl slightly at the idea that the mutie could be reading his thoughts and turned to concentrate on the driving. The removal of their tongues had been done simply to protect his secrets. It had also made each of his wives oddly loyal to him, as faithful as dogs, and he trusted their judgment implicitly. Spewing great columns of bluish smoke, the APC angled away from the salt flats and into the rolling dunes, seeking shelter from the oncoming daylight. Soon enough, Gaza would find the others. Horses had to rest, but the APC could drive non-stop all night long. There was no possible escape for the Outlanders from his war wag, the deadly machine gun, and his doomy wife. By tomorrow midnight, they would be dead at his feet, and then he could get back to his plan of seizing another Ville to rule and continuing his war against the traitor. As the rest of the companions rushed to her side, Christy bent to sniff at her hand. There was no odor of any kind, but there could be no other logical reason for the horse's violent death, except poison.
What the hell happened?
Mildred approached the corpse with a drawn blaster. If the physician had learned anything living in the Deathlands, it was to approach every situation as if it was a life-or-death battle. All too often it was. Ryan covered the animal with his 9mm Sig Sauer, while JB knelt by the horse and checked its neck. After confirming that there was no pulse, he stood up.
It's dead all right, but this doesn't look like exhaustion, and it's not hot enough for heat stroke.
Did a scream wing get it?
Instantly, the other companions raised their blasters and scanned the lightening sky for any movement. Scream wings were tiny flying muties that could send a person on the last train west in a split second with their needle-sharp beaks. Small and fast, scream wings were harder than hell to shoot down, and died trying to take its victim with them.
No, it wasn't a screamer.
Christy threw away her canteen.
I think the water is poisoned.
All canteens?
Jack frowned deeply, his own blaster resting comfortably in his good hand. The blued steel shone like polished violence in the dim morning glow. The red-haired woman shook her head.
No, I drank from that before, and so did my horse. It's the big water bag.
Must be incredibly powerful toxins to cause this severe reaction in so large an animal. My guess would be a neurotoxin of some kind. Heavy metals and such would never work this fast.
At those words, Christy froze in the process of wiping her hand dry on her leg. Now the woman knelt and scrubbed her palm with the salty sand until the skin was bright pink. Then she spat in her palm and wiped it clean again. Seeing the actions, Doc handed her a spare moist towelette from the opened MRE, and she cleaned both hands thoroughly.
Calm down. It's okay. If the chemicals haven't been absorbed through the pores by now, I'd say you're safe.
Christy's fiery hair relaxed back into gentle waves.
Are you sure?
Kneeling by the dead animal, Mildred peeled back an eyelid to examine the pupils. Drawing a knife, she pried open the mouth to inspect the tongue. There was no discoloration or marked lividity. Interesting.
Am I sure? No, not without an autopsy. Maybe the horse had heartworms.
Phew. Dog get, not horse.
Could be a muty version that affects other animals.
Tucking away his lama, Doc bowed his head and muttered something in the pre-Dark language he called Latin that sounded like a poem or a prayer. Keeping his weapon in hand, Ryan went over to the leather water bag lying in the sand beside the dead animal.
That was the bag we took from the stable.
Scowling, Ryan nudged the bag with the bulbous tip of the silenced blaster. The fluid inside sloshed about like water, and there were no telltale secondary motions of anything alive inside the sack. It had been a long-shot idea, but it never hurt to check.
Can't be the same. I drank from that bag.
Dean pointed to the bag in question, but then paused.
No, wait. It was the smaller bag on Doc's horse.
You triple sure?
Yeah, Dad, I'm sure.
Good. The net water is clean.
Jack, what about your water?
Not use mine.
Jack patted the heavy bag hanging from the rear of his saddle.
Drank canteen before.
Grabbing her satchel off the pommel of her mount, Mildred strode to the other horse and removed the bag as if it were a ticking bomb. Pouring some of the water onto the ground, she sniffed, then removed a small swimming pool testing kit and ran a sample. It wasn't much, but all that she had, and it did give accurate results within a limited spectrum. Filling a plastic tube, Mildred added a few drops of chemicals, and the water promptly turned a bright orange, and then went clear. She held the vial to the sunlight.
Oh, damn. The water neutralized the acid immediately. This is contaminated with a base chemical of some kind. There's no way to tell for sure, but I would guess it's scorpion venom.
Doc raised an imperious eyebrow.
Ridiculous. Venom strong enough to kill a horse, madam?
Remember that these things like the daylight instead of the night, like a normal scorpion. And the ones caged back at Rock Point were the largest I've ever seen. Who knows what other attributes may have mutated since the nuke cost?
Of course.
Doc fumbled with the silver lion's head of his sword stick. There was a sharp click, and the decorative head slid back to reveal several inches of shiny steel hidden inside the stick. Then Doc slammed it back into place with a locking snap.
By the three Kennedys! This is why those water bags were hanging near the horses.
A trap.
Makes sense. A bag of water just hanging there for anybody to take, in a town where folks get killed over a thimbleful? It was just bait for horse thieves to take along. Then the locals could simply watch for buzzards in the sky and get their horses back.
Along with the blasters and other possessions of the thieves.
Jack nodded in wry acknowledgement, brushing back his snowy white hair.
Smart.
Millie, anything we can do to clean the water? Boil it or something?
Too bad not have bread. Drain radiator fluid through stale bread and make drinkable. Not know if wake this.
Piss might do it.
JB made a rude noise at Ryan's comment, but Mildred agreed.
That might work. Urine neutralizes scorpion venom in an external bite, so logically it should also work on tainted water. Basic chemistry there, bases and acids. However, for water this strongly polluted, it might require so much urine that the resulting mixture would be rendered totally undrinkable afterward.
Doc struggled to contain his revulsion.
Well, I would certainly think so.
I agree. Tobacco also works on scorpion bites, but with the same results. The water might be safe, but nobody would willingly drink it until absolutely necessary.
Which might be the case. We're low on water now and have no idea how much farther it is to reach the lowlands where the trader travels.
A couple of hundred miles at least. From now on, we piss in that bag and save it for boiling later.
Much, much later.
We can only do this once. We're already dehydrated, and the ammonia content of our urine will be dangerously high.
Better than dying.
Okay, do we have anything else that hasn't been checked over yet? We could be hauling a dozen more booby traps among our stolen supplies.
Quickly, the companions laid out their belongings and checked over every item carefully, but no other traps were discovered. That was good news, but it was tempered by the fact that the companions were now dangerously low on water and reduced to only 5 horses for 7 adults. Jack rubbed his wounded arm.
Maybe take turns riding. Horse is too tired for double riders.
Just then, a large black scorpion scuttled into view from under a rock, snapping its pincers happily at the heat of the morning sun. Standing nearby, Dean moved fast and crushed it under his combat boot, grinding the heel to make sure the little killer was thoroughly aced.
Okay, no time to waste. We leave on foot. We need shelter and we need it bastard fast. We're all gonna walk for a while. That will let the horses get some rest in case serious trouble arrives and we have to ride again. If that comes, Dean goes with Jack on the stallion, JB with Mildred on the big gelding.
Christy stepped up to the man and rested a hand on his shoulder.
Correction, lover. We walk, but you ride. Each of us caught some sleep yesterday, but you haven't in days. We're alive now because of that. But right now, I doubt if you could shoot the side of a barn with your long blaster, even if you were fragging inside the building.
Inhaling sharply, Ryan felt his hair trigger temper flare at the words, but then found himself too weary to even argue. She was right. Even with the coffee working, he was on his last legs. Nodding assent, the man forced himself to climb into the saddle and squeeze his feet into the small stirrups. This had to have originally been a woman's horse. Maybe one for the Baron's many wives, unless Gaza himself was a very small man, which Ryan doubted. It was well-trained and bridle-wise, but didn't really seem to like a rider as large as Ryan.
Okay, I'm on point.
JB adjusted his fedora and swung his Uzi around to the front. He worked the bolt, chambering around for immediate use.
2-yard spread. Jack and Dean, take turns leading your mount. Doc, your rear guard. Stay razor.
I am honored. And shall remain as sharp as the sword of Damocles.
That means okay.
Guiding the horses by the reins, the companions started across the dune and down the other side. Ahead of them stretched the endless vista of the desert, the salty ground rippling from the gentle morning breeze. Allowing his tense muscles to slowly relax, Ryan swayed in the saddle. Slowly stooping his shoulders, Ryan expertly leaned forward, his hands crossed at the pommel, with the reins looped securely over twice, slowly allowing himself to succumb to the sweet siren call of sleep, the big man's eyes soon closed. Walking close by, Christy smiled as she heard a soft sound of snoring. Bravery didn't make a warrior bulletproof, and even men of iron needed to eat and sleep.